Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with your hosts, Drs. Francine Foss and Anish Chagpar. Dr. Foss is a professor of medicine in the section of medical oncology at the Yale Cancer Center, and she's an internationally recognized clinician and clinical researcher. Dr. Chagpar is associate professor of surgical oncology and director of the Breast Center at Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. Yale Cancer Center Answers features weekly conversations about the most recent advances in the research, diagnosis, and treatment of cancer. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can submit questions and comments to canceranswers@yale.edu, or you can leave a voicemail message at 888-234-4YCC. This week, you'll hear a conversation about fertility preservation in patients with cancer with Dr. Emery Selle. Dr. Selle is professor of obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive sciences, director of the Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility, and chief of reproductive endocrinology and infertility at the Yale School of Medicine. Here's Anish Chagpar.
Emery, you've got a lot of titles. Tell us a little bit more about what exactly is your specialty and what you do.
So I'm, I'm a faculty at Yale. Within that context, I do take care of patients, but I also perform research in animal models. The aim of, what I do overall is to help women get pregnant. And everything that I do in the laboratory and the clinical practice is toward that goal.
So really, we're talking about fertility preservation and really allowing women to have the experience of getting pregnant and having children. Tell us a little bit more about how that is impacted by cancer.
So cancer treatment generally involves either radiotherapy, when radiation is given to patients, or chemotherapy. And both treatments have a significant negative effect on female fertility. The main reason for that is women are born with a finite number of eggs that they spent during their reproductive lifetime. And any negative impact on their body at any given time would affect all their eggs. This is unlike men, who continues to make sperm during all their lifetime. So cancer treatment, either with radiotherapy or chemotherapy, would affect a woman's ability to have children in the future.
So let's say a woman gets cancer. Are there certain kinds of cancer that affect fertility more than other kinds of cancer, or certain kinds of chemotherapy that affect a woman's fertility more than other kinds?
Yeah, that's a good point. Good question. We basically, it's not the cancer itself that affects the fertility, but it is what we do to treat the cancer. Therefore, the cancer's impact on female fertility is much more determined by when it occurs. Today, the most important cancer, as far as female fertility is concerned, is breast cancer. Not because breast cancer affects fertility in a bad way, but because breast cancer, although most breast cancers are in the older ages, is the most common cause of cancer at the reproductive lifetime of a woman. Therefore, the treatments that we perform to treat breast cancer negatively affect female fertility. And also, as far as the chemotherapies, there are certain medications that affect DNA stability in the egg. And because in the egg, the chromosomes are about to be divided, and if anything that we give the patient any medication that bothers that process, then it will have a negative impact on fertility.
So particularly for breast cancer, this is something that needs to be considered. So let's suppose you're a young woman and you happen to get breast cancer and your world has just been spun upside down because now you've been given this diagnosis. Is there any way, after you've dealt with the breast cancer, after it's been treated, that then you can try to restore your fertility? Or is this something that you really need to think about before the treatment starts?
Another very good question. Before. It has to be done before. So a few concepts are that because of the available treatments and because, again, of the available finite number of eggs that are present in a woman's body, we have to make sure we protect those eggs. And the interventions to protect those eggs should be done before we give a high-dose chemotherapy that may basically kill all of them. Now, not all chemotherapies are equally bad, and certain chemotherapies, especially the ones that are very strong and are done prior to bone marrow transplantation, those are the worst ones. So if a woman passed the first one or two stages without preserving her fertility, she could still go back and do fertility preservation prior to the most intensive chemotherapy. But the most effective intervention would be before the cancer treatment.
So for a lot of patients, then, this is just another thing to think about. You know, they are diagnosed with cancer. They're thinking about life, the universe, and everything now that they've been given this diagnosis. But it's important that if they're really thinking about having children afterwards, that they think about fertility preservation as well. What are options for them in terms of fertility preservation? And as you tell us about those options, let us know a little bit more about how long each of those options takes, because I'm certain that there are women who say things like, I really want to have children, but I really want to live more. I really want to get my treatment done in a timely fashion, and I don't want to risk that.
Perfect. So it is actually pretty simple. There are mainly four options for fertility preservation today. Two of them are considered established options, and the other two are more experimental. The first one, the most established one, is cryopreserving embryos. This means getting eggs from a woman, mating the eggs with the sperm from her partner or her husband, and then freezing the embryos. This is a very well-established procedure, not only for cancer patients, but for any woman who is undergoing fertility treatment for any reason. It is done maybe 30, 40,000 times in the United States every year. Protocols are very clear. To do this, you would need between 2 to 4 weeks in order to obtain the eggs. And so, because you need to obtain the eggs, there are certain downsides of this approach. And the most important one is the need for a sperm. If, of course, a woman could also use donor sperm, but it is a really difficult concept to grasp at the time when you're also diagnosed with cancer. There's also another issue about ownership of the embryo if a negative outcome came from the cancer treatment. And that generally, you know, caused a negative impact on the decision-making process. The second option, so the first one is embryo freezing. The second option is freezing eggs. This did not used to be a successful procedure in the past, but in the recent years, in the last 5 years, it became more and more and more efficient. And last year in October, American Society of Reproductive Medicine removed the label experimental from this procedure, and now this is a established fertility preservation procedure. You still need the time to get the eggs, this exact same time that you need it for embryo freezing. However, it's much easier because you don't need to have a partner or accept donor sperm. And there is no confusion about who owns the egg. So these are the two main approaches that we have today for fertility preservation. The third one, which is still considered experimental despite a lot of experiments made in this field, is to freeze the ovaries. This approach is extremely useful, especially for prepubertal girls from whom you cannot obtain eggs. So you cannot freeze eggs or embryos from prepubertal girls, but you can get a piece of the ovary. Once you obtain the ovary, and after the cancer has been treated, you can put the ovaries back into the body. You can either put them back into where we took it from, where the ovaries used to be, or we can also put them back in another part of the body. Babies have been produced through ovaries that were removed, frozen, thawed, and put back into the same person. Mm. Worldwide, there are more than 100 births through this process. However, it's still an experimental procedure because it's quite cumbersome to undergo surgery. And then the freeze and thaw procedure, there are still issues with it. But most importantly, the eggs that are in the ovary prior to hormonal stimulation are not mature eggs. And the procedure that we call in vitro maturation of eggs obtained from the ovary has not been perfected. So as of today, we are not able to efficiently get an egg from a frozen thawed ovary in the laboratory and make that egg into an embryo. We don't know how to do that. There's been significant support from National Institute of Health. We have done a lot of research in this project, in this type of fertility preservation, but it is not streamlined yet. And the fourth approach is not related to freezing anything, but it involves giving a medication to the woman that will put her into a semi-prepubertal stage. It will push her to be to an immature ovarian state. And there is a belief that if we do that, the ovaries get less hurt by the chemotherapy. We do this by affecting the function of a hormone that's secreted by the brain. And we can easily do this. It's a single injection. It's not very invasive. It doesn't take any time. Except the jury is still out about whether this is really a useful procedure. And also, we really don't know the mechanism by which this should work. We performed quite a bit of a series of experiments in our laboratory, and we could not find why it should be helping women. But there is some data that it could be. So it's offered to women because it doesn't have real concerning side effects. I mean, it does have side effects, but nothing compared to chemotherapy.
Does it affect the treatment that a woman would get with her cancer? It doesn't.
So the first two of them, the first two, embryo cryopreservation and oocyte cryopreservation, would delay cancer treatment up to a month. The most important group, as I said, of women with cancer who comes to us for fertility preservation are women with breast cancer. And what happens usually is that these women undergo surgery, and there's a lag period between surgery and chemotherapy. And we try to fit our embryo or oocyte freezing into that window. Ovary cryopreservation is a surgery. If the woman is undergoing a surgery, then we get a piece of the ovary, and there is no time spent other than just freezing the ovaries. And then the fourth option does not require any lag time.
So let's talk a little bit about each of those four options in a bit greater detail. It seems to me that the first two options, the established options, involve freezing of either the embryo or an oocyte, an egg. Well, can you tell us a little bit more about the details, like where are these stored? Who pays for that? How much does that cost? Does insurance cover it? Because a lot of these questions, I would imagine, are questions that patients would want to know. But first, let me ask you, in the 30 seconds that we have before break, are these questions that you usually get?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so we are going to need to, unfortunately, break for a medical minute. And so you'll just have to stay tuned to find out the answers to those questions after we come right back and learn more about fertility preservation with my guest, Dr. Emery Selle.
Breast cancer is the most common cancer in women, and in Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in 2014 and nearly 200,000 nationwide. But there is new hope. With earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies, there are more options for patients to fight breast cancer than ever before. Women should schedule a baseline mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers such as Yale Cancer Center and Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven to make innovative new treatments available to patients. Digital breast tomosynthesis, or 3D mammography, is transforming breast screening by significantly reducing unnecessary procedures while picking up more cancers and eliminating some of the fear and anxiety many women experience. This has been a Medical Minute brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center and Smilow Cancer Hospital at Yale New Haven. More information is available at yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Anise Chagpar, and I'm joined today by my guest, Dr. Emery Selle. We are talking about fertility preservation for cancer patients, and right before the break, we were talking about how, particularly for breast cancer patients, they get a cancer diagnosis right at the time when they're thinking about having children, and how, for many patients, chemotherapy in particular can really prevent them from going on to having children. And Dr. Selle was telling us about several of the modalities that are available for patients in order to preserve their fertility. Two of these involved freezing either embryos or eggs. And so right before the break, I asked Dr. Selle, and I hope that he'll answer now, some of the questions that I think our audience would have, like, where are these stored? Who pays for that? Does insurance pay for that? How exactly does this work?
So I'll go one by one. Embryo cryopreservation, as I was mentioning, is a more established, you know, it's been around for a long time. And it's done for many women who are undergoing infertility treatment without cancer when they produce extra embryos, you know, more than they could use. Rather than discarding the embryos, many couples would choose to freeze them. So that's why the embryo freezing procedure had been perfected. In order to generate embryos to freeze, a patient would have to be in an infertility center, a fertility center. In this environment, it would be Yale Fertility Center. They would have to see a reproductive specialist, and then they will start treatment. After the treatment, when they're ready, the treatment will include stimulation of their ovaries. And when they're ready, they would undergo a procedure called retrieval. And the retrieval would be under anesthesia or sedation, and then oocytes would be removed, eggs would be removed, and fertilized with the sperm, again in the same building as they're undergoing the retrieval. And the embryos would be frozen and stored in the same building. Once the embryos are frozen and stored, the couple would have the opportunity to transfer these embryos anywhere they want to go. Let's say if they are in New Haven, they may keep their embryos with us, but then if they moved somewhere else in the country, they could transport their embryos to another fertility center over there. It would not be kept in their household, etc. And another common question is how long embryos can be kept frozen. It's basically, as far as we know, there is no time limit on it, as long as they are safe and the temperature is kept where it's supposed to be. And the recovery rate of embryos that have been frozen is around 95%, so it's quite efficient procedure. The as far as the pricing goes, it is pretty similar to an IVF cycle, except the patient does not undergo transfer. So they undergo stimulation, they undergo monitoring during this procedure, then they undergo egg retrieval to extract the eggs from the patient, but then there's only freezing, but they don't do the transfer. And the cost of this in the country is around $8,000. And whether the insurance covers this or not is really dependent on the insurance. Many do, some do, I should say, and many don't. And at our center and many others, there are financial counselors who really try to make this as fast as possible, because you need the approval to be obtained almost overnight to be able to facilitate and do the procedure really fast. There are also certain ways of getting medications for either a low cost or for free from certain companies, because there are certain programs for cancer patients who cannot afford medications, because medication is also quite costly in when you do fertility treatment. So we generally work with the patient and try to get the medications for that specific cycle very quickly and without a significant cost to the parent if they don't have the financial means, or or the insurance to cover for it.
So I guess the next question is, let's say you were a patient, you before your therapy started, you went, you had either your eggs harvested or an embryo cryopreserved, and then you go on and you have your chemotherapy and the rest of your treatment for cancer. When can you have that egg or that embryo re-implanted? When can you get pregnant?
You can get pregnant when your oncologist basically tells you that it is okay to try. The oncologists, I understand they're not completely homogeneous in their choices probably, but they, in my experience, most of them would ask their patients to be disease-free for a long period of time. It could be 3 years or it could be 5 years, depending on the patient. That has been my experience. They call this remission, and they want an extended remission in order to attempt pregnancy.
And so, okay, you've now gotten out to 3 years or 5 years, and you say to your oncologist, I made it through my cancer treatment. Thank you so much. Now what would give me great joy and pleasure is to have a baby. How does that process take place?
So when it is a frozen egg or an embryo, what it entails is to put an embryo back into the patient's uterus. We're assuming that our patient did not have a uterine cancer, so she continues to have a uterus. In that case, and if she had frozen embryos, what we would do is we would prepare her uterus with hormones and bring the uterus into a state that it would accept an embryo, and then thaw the embryo, and under ultrasound guidance and with a tiny catheter, we would transfer the embryo into the uterus. It's a quite a simple procedure for us. It's not dangerous at all. It's not a painful procedure, and it's quite successful. If the patient froze oocytes, then she would have to decide how she wants to make the oocyte into an embryo. Basically, if she has a husband or a partner, then she would use his sperm to fertilize the eggs in vitro in the laboratory. Or if she does not have a partner or a husband, then she could choose to obtain donor sperm, which is quite easy. And then she could fertilize eggs with donor sperm. Once the fertilization happens, then the embryos can be transferred into the uterus, the same as we did we would do for a thawed embryo. And it is actually, once the details are sorted out, the procedure is quite simple. It is much more complicated if the patient froze eggs or embryos and then also lost her uterus. It would happen mostly with cancers that involve the uterus itself, and then, or cervix, and then the uterus would have to be removed. In that case, she would have to find a gestational carrier. And there is quite a bit of a legal aspect of this, but it is very well organized. We do it many times every year. And what we do is then we make sure they have the right contracts. We make sure that the carrier is a healthy individual and who is deciding independently to help this couple. And then we prepare her uterus, thaw the embryos, and transfer to her.
So what about the situation where you're implanting these embryos? Is it different than if you were, for many patients who are undergoing fertility treatments for infertility, as I understand, there's often an issue of having multiple pregnancies because you implant multiple embryos. Is it the same in cancer patients or not?
The same risk persists for the cancer patient. Obviously, the fertility potential of each embryo is different, and each woman's embryos are different in their ability to result in a baby. So let's say if a woman is 30-year-old, either she with infertility or with cancer, her embryos are more likely to result in a baby compared to a 35-year-old woman. But if you have eggs or embryos from a 30-year-old woman, one with cancer and one without, is there a difference between them? We don't really know. Some people think that cancer itself may cause a decrease in fertility, but this is not really clear yet.
So when you implant embryos back, you implant more than just one?
That's what we generally do, but we can just implant one if that's what the patient wants.
And what, in terms of a ballpark percentage, what is the take rate?
So there's the take rate called, if we think about each embryo's ability to result in a baby, it depends on different studies, but it could be 10%, it could be 15%. Some people give much higher notes. But it is determined by the age of the egg. So age of the woman who produced the egg. So if you are 30-year-old and have egg retrieval, embryos are frozen and kept in the refrigerator freezer for you, and you come 5 years later, you should think of your embryos as the embryos of a 30-year-old because they were frozen in time. So there will be a significant difference in the take rate of a 30 versus a 40-year-old woman.
And so the amount of time that it's been sitting in the freezer doesn't play in?
We don't think so.
What about, you know, we've talked a lot about patients who have had breast cancer because clearly that's the population that is most affected. But you can only imagine that there is a whole cohort of pediatric patients, kids who get lymphomas at a very young age, who require chemotherapy. Should their parents be thinking about fertility preservation in them? Is this ever something that comes up?
It does come up, and it's a very delicate subject. In my experience, and I don't see very young patients very often, I mostly see reproductive age women, but most of even the teenage girls, they are not necessarily interested in thinking about having a baby. So if a young girl or almost teenager girl becomes, you know, gets cancer, then generally their parents are involved. And it's a discussion between the whole family and us, and we try to explain all the options. It's really stressful for the parents, and we always provide psychological support for them. We have a social worker, a psychologist who talks to them, to help them, you know, asking the right questions to each other. And the key concept, though, that we have to communicate to them is, unfortunately, for a prepubertal child, so if you have an 8-year-old girl who is diagnosed with cancer, there's only a single option for fertility preservation, and it is what I described earlier in my explanation as an experimental option. The only thing we have in our hands is to freeze part of her ovaries. Because by definition, when you're in pre-puberty, we cannot get eggs or embryos from a girl. And the experimental medical treatment that I told you is also not useful because they're already pre-pubertal. So you can put them more into a pre-pubertal stage. So it is not an easy conversation to have with them because what I will have to tell them is that there's something we can offer, which is freezing ovaries. However, I cannot reliably guess how helpful it will be in the future because the procedure itself is not extremely well established.
Is it ever the case that after, if we take the case that you started with, an 8-year-old girl who has a cancer who is treated, is it ever the case that they can, sometime after their chemotherapy, that their fertility can come back? Or is it that after cancer treatment, if you haven't done something to preserve your fertility, you've kind of burnt that bridge?
This is also a very good question. It can come back. And let me give you the details. Basically, the impact of chemotherapy on fertility is worse for older women. When I say older, I mean older reproductive age woman. So a younger reproductive age woman would be, let's say, a 25-year-old woman versus a 45-year-old woman. If you have a 45-year-old woman who's undergoing chemotherapy, then she's very likely to lose her fertility forever. Whereas a 25-year-old may lose it for some time to come back. But if she loses all her eggs, even at age 25, she will not be able to make new eggs.
Dr. Emery Selly is professor of obstetrics, gynecology, and reproductive sciences, director of the Division of Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility, and chief of reproductive endocrinology and infertility at Yale School of Medicine. We invite you to share your questions and comments with Drs. Foss and Chagpar. You can send them to canceranswers@yale.edu or leave a voicemail message at 1-888-234-4YCC. And as an additional resource, archived programs from 2006 through the present are available in both audio and written versions at yalecancercenter.org/answers/archives. We'd like to thank the Yale Cancer Center for providing production support as part of the Connecting Our Communities initiative from Connecticut Public Broadcasting. And we'd also like to thank Renee Gaudette, Emily Fenton, and the staff of the Yale Broadcast and Media Center. I'm Bruce Barber, hoping you'll join us again next Sunday evening at 6 for another edition of Yale Cancer Center Answers here on WNPR, Connecticut's public media source for news and ideas.